Hey now, it's Mike Gilbert, host of the Mike and JD Show, right here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Join JD by God Oliva and myself every Thursday night live on the Voices of Wrestling YouTube channel at 11:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time as we stay up all night discussing all the hottest stories in professional wrestling. You can also check us out right here on the Voices of Wrestling podcasting feed, or you can subscribe to the Mike and JD Show feed. Now, enjoy the show.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling podcasting network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Do you like professional wrestling? Well, we like professional wrestling too. This week in the news, we talk a little bit about the death of Bill Mercer in the lazy river of wrestling criticism, the promos, the good, the bad, and the ugly. And Invader Club this week, my week, I picked Mongo versus the Barbarian from Nitro and then Horseman versus Faces of Fear from Halloween Havoc 96. Mongo, but pawn in Game of Life. This is Shake Them Ropes. I am Jeff Hawkins. He is Chris Novembrino. And Chris, while I do a live read, I want you to think about something. When you were first getting into music and wanted to be a musician, what was your dream? Like, what was the pinnacle of your profession? I'll let you ponder on that, and then I'll get back to you. The worlds of professional wrestling and improv comedy collide in a one-of-a-kind event, Yes and Wrestling, taking place Friday, April 18th at 10 p.m. at Mom's Basement Theater in Las Vegas. Wrestling superstars and improv comedians come together for a night of hilarious unscripted entertainment. Fans will get an exclusive behind-the-scenes look at the wild world of wrestling as their favorite stars share unbelievable stories from their careers, stories that will then be transformed into improv comedy scenes in real time. Special guests for this show include Shane Haste, Chris's favorite slapjack, Leva Bates, and Peter Avalon. Hosting the evening is Josh Tariff, known for his work as the lead host of AfterBuzz TV's wrestling shows, and as a longtime Southern California wrestling personality, Christian Rosenberg. Also on the bill, Shane Hartline, actor, comedian, and owner of Nearly Average Wrestling. He's doing great stuff on TikTok these days. And Emily May, interview personality for New Japan Pro Wrestling, Stardom, and Reality of Wrestling. Tickets can be purchased at momsbasementtheater.com. That's Friday, April 18th at 10 p.m. If you need something to do that night, please go support them. They are good people. Okay. I wrote Josh. I said, you know, Shane Haste has to only do improv as slapjack. And I got shot down immediately.
I mean, come on. Like, that would be so, at least several scenes with slapjack appear. Not just one, like the first one, but then later on in the night, again, slapjack, kind of like the improv thing where you like pull out a gun and you shoot everybody in the scene.
Well, if they were doing yes, that's good for improv. The question to you, cause I got in a little bit of trouble here. What was your dream, when you became a musician? What did you really want to do? What was
okay. Okay, so like my dumb like kid fantasy back in the day was that like I, having learned how to play like basically all of Fugazi's catalog, would one day find myself in a situation where one or the other member was sick and I would be able to fill in on guitar. Oh, I mean, okay. Like, and then like, I guess more realistically, what did I want to do once I started playing guitar?
Like Grammy, sold out stadium, platinum record, number one hit.
Dude, I just wanted to make the music that was in my head. It sounds really weird or simple, but like it used to drive me crazy as a middle schooler that I would like literally hear songs in my head and have no way of capturing them in any meaningful shape or form. I would like be in class and like doodling and hearing music in my head. And so my big goal in learning instruments was like actually to like translate the stuff that I hear in my brain onto an instrument in like a direct way. And like, you know, early on it was really, really, really crude, and it got sharper. The images get sharper and sharper. Now I can like hear a song and then basically play, grab my guitar and already know where the chords are for it.
Okay.
That, I mean, truly, my goal as a musician was to have like, not to sound hippy dippy on a Saturday morning, but like a cosmic connection with music where like the stuff that I hear in my head and I envision, I can execute that. Like when I grab a guitar, I can move through a flow state in it.
There's nothing wrong with your answer, because I think there are plenty of people in arts and in wrestling who want that. And I think a lot of them are gravitating to AEW. Like when I started doing stand up and
But they all hate me, Jeff.
No. When I started doing stand up way back in the day, it was I did my first show in 1991 when I was 17. And for me, the pinnacle of stand up then was going on Carson, doing your 7 minutes and getting the wave over from Johnny, you know, getting
come
the
and
high
sit
sign.
At the desk.
Come sit at the desk, do another bit. And you'll have a sitcom deal the next day, pretty much. That and the half-hour Comedy Hour HBO special. That was really what I wanted. Well, reason I bring this up is because I got into an argument with a few different people. We don't like doing a lot of rumor on this show, but the rumor is that Mariah May's contract is up this year and that she might be headed towards WWE. And my statement was, if you are an artist like Mariah May or whatever, and WWE wants you, that's the rejoinder here, that you're almost obligated to go if you've never been.
And that's I don't know why you wouldn't. There's only two stops in the tour in your career, right? Like, I feel like as an artist, if you are interested in being a professional wrestler who sort of checks all the boxes, at some point you've got to go to WWE.
You want to see how you measure up in the top company, you know, and also for me, Mariah May has pretty much hit her pinnacle in AEW very early. She was the world's women's champion in there. There's, you know, unless she's going to be the face of the company, which is not going to happen for a woman, I don't think, unless there's a possibility Toni Storm may be on her way there, even though I think Mercedes is the better pick. But
neither of them are going to be the face of the company.
Yeah, but the other thing is, and this is part and parcel to a weakness to me in AEW, is that as a person who wants to grow your presence in wrestling, in AEW, you will never be bigger than the wrestling. Like, as a personality or whatever, you will not be, you know, and I think even Cody ran into this kind of issue when he was in AEW. It's like, you are never going to be bigger than Tony's drive for a 5-star match in the Wrestling Observer. You just aren't. And it's one of those things where you go to WWE to expand your brand, but also to see, all right, like, I have no problem with Swerve leaving WWE. He was in the sausage grinder for a while. He didn't like it. It wasn't his thing.
Oh, Hit Row was not going anywhere. And no. He had tried several different iterations, and they just didn't have anything.
Yeah, I'm not saying people need to go back once they've experienced it. But I think it's one of those things where if you don't go and they want you, it's going to eat at you. You know, it's like one of those things where it's like, I could have gone to played in the Major League Baseball, even if it was only on like a 10-day contract. You know, I was in the show for 10 days. And if you never, like, for me, it's going to eat at me that I never got audition for Saturday Night Live. It will, because my dream, I really wanted Weekend Update. That was my, you know, holy grail of comedy, was following in the footsteps of Dennis Miller. And I've written jokes for Dennis Miller. I've gotten to do things, you know, in comedy that are cool and stuff. But I never, you know, I never reached that point where I was flown out to 30 Rock to audition for Saturday Night Live. And that's, you know, that's something on my resume that's going to be lacking, and it's going to eat me. I think, and people go, well, you know, money isn't everything. And I go, yeah, but still,
People generally do things for money, and especially anything that involves wear and tear on your body, you start to, as they say in the wrestling business, think about your bumps. But, you know, let's say you are driving cab. You start to think about how many hours in a day reasonably you can be sitting down before it starts to wear and tear on your back. As a guitar player, you start to think about making sure that your hands and stuff are in good shape and that you're maintaining from arthritis. You only have so many reps doing whatever it is that you're going to do. It's not merely age, it's wear and tear. So
that's why I don't fault Okada or Nakamura. I really don't.
I mean, like some of these, you know, or even Tanahashi when he would do slow motion stuff in, you know, that last decade of his career. It's not just about age. It's just about wear and tear.
The Mania indie shows where, hey, we got Tanahashi, and you come out and you get quarter speed, half the bump Tanahashi, and
arguably you get Tanahashi.
Yes, it's one of those things where you get the presence of Tanahashi, and then everybody would kind of be going, yeah, but that wasn't as good as the New Japan stuff. Yeah, no kidding.
No kidding. Yeah, no, I mean, so I don't necessarily fault anyone for going, look,
yeah,
I am now seasoned, and with that seasoning and with that veteran status, I am one, playing at my peak, doing whatever I'm doing at my peak. Two, I realize that my peak physically only goes on for a finite amount of time. And if I care about my skills at an art level and making sure people see them, I want to make sure that I'm able to do my best work on the biggest stage. If that's a priority item for me, then you know, you make the moves to do that accordingly.
It's weird because I will occasionally do an improv show, or I will occasionally go out to an open mic night to do a stand up, to do 5 minutes or whatever of material that's in my head or something like that, and it comes much easier to me. Because my identity is no longer really wrapped up in comedy either. Like, I don't need to kill because there might be somebody in the audience that night who could help me or something to that effect. I can just go up there, relax, do what I... Hey, I want to try this tonight. Okay, let's do it. If it fails, it fails. If it doesn't, it doesn't. And it's really it's actually a monkey off my back, to be honest with you, at times, is it being able to do it in a seasoned position where you can do it like that. But it's just like when you're in the grind and trying to reach some sort of mountaintop or something like that, your entire focus and stuff can get screwed up with that too. So
right. Well, I mean, just singularly focusing on the achievement portion, especially in an arts career, can leave you a success without the art. Let's talk about Jimmy Fallon, shall we?
Yeah, or it could leave you the art without the success, and then you start compensating with things like drugs, or even if you get the success.
Or being, yeah, right, yeah, no, for sure. In particular, if you lose sight of the art, you know, you end up being a Ryan Seacrest. Well, not that Ryan Seacrest is ever trying to do art. But, you know, like Jimmy Fallon has turned into Ryan Seacrest. And at one point, he was supposed to be like a stand-up comic, I've been told.
Yeah, yeah.
I've been told he did comedy at one point.
I've told all these late-night guys did comedy at one point. Instead, they're doing... They're doing struggle sessions every night. Let's go to the news. Bill Mercer passed away at the age of 98. Most well known to wrestling fans as really the elder statesman of world class championship wrestling in the 70s and 80s. Legit news guy. Also infamous. If you've watched There's a documentary on the Kennedy assassination. Bill Mercer was covering the Kennedy assassination back in the day, and he's the guy who told Lee Harvey Oswald that he was about to be arrested.
Whoa.
Yeah. Just a life well-lived, did legitimate broadcasting for the Dallas Cowboys radio network at one time. Really said his his greatest accomplishment was being a university professor at North Texas University. But for me, like, he had that great broadcaster voice, much like even his successor Mark Lawrence did, but Mark was a little bit younger. But Bill was kind of like, Bill was in that Bob Caudle vein, and just hearing him say things like the modern day warrior Kerry Von Erich, and you're like, wow, there's some legitimacy there. But also, my God, man, what have you become? Yeah, I sent you a clip from old Black and White with him and Fritz Von Erich that I thought was a lot of fun. But yeah, world class, a lot more important to my upbringing than perhaps yours, although I'm sure you've watched some in your...
I've definitely watched some in here
thing,
and there.
But like the Kennedy assassination stuff, when I found out about it, and that was only like a year or two ago for me personally, and then watching, like, it was an Amazon documentary, I think, on it, and seeing him in all the old newsreels during that time, dude, that's a life right there.
I mean, it's just, I think it's always remarkable when someone can make it into their late 90s, and a guy like Bill Mercer was still kind of doing stuff pretty late in his life, right? He was still going to cons and things.
I don't know if he did cons. He did the couple of world-class documentaries that came out, that I think the one the WWE did, I think he got paid well, and
maybe I have my people crossed, but I thought he was still...
I don't think getting, he did the cons.
I thought he was still getting out and about fairly.
He was out, but I think it was one of those things where he didn't really like, I think he did a few cons early, but it was one of those things where he wasn't on like the WrestleCon circuit going out there and pressing the flesh. Like, if you recognize him from wrestling... Yeah, but I did other things.
And you just glossed. I mean, you mentioned North Texas. What did he teach here at North Texas? That is my alma mater.
Broadcasting.
Broadcasting. Yeah, he was so proud of all of his students. He loved the University of North Texas. Very cool.
You went to University of North Texas? I did not know that.
Yeah, that's where I graduated from.
I thought it was Amherst for some reason.
No, I went to UMass Amherst for a year, and then I graduated from UNT.
Yeah, let's see, he did the Muskegee Giants, the Dallas Rangers, moved on to the Texas Rangers. I believe he was the first broadcaster for them, and the Chicago White Sox. Play-by-play for University of North Texas, known as North Texas State until 1961, and North Texas State University from 1961 to 1988, the Dallas Texans, and then eventually the Dallas Cowboys, etc., the Frisco Rough Riders. Also noted for calling the Ice Bowl, the NFL championship game between the Dallas Cowboys and Green Bay Packers in 1967, along with the Cowboys' second Super Bowl appearance in January 1972. Yeah. It was one of those things where you could see the shift in world class. And I think it came around the time when Gary Hart and Skandar Akbar kind of had a split parting of the ways, and some went to UWF and some tried to maintain a thing in Texas, and Mark Lawrence went with one side and Bill Mercer the other. I'm not entirely certain of that, but it was just odd that with all the Kennedy stuff coming out in the last week or so, that Bill Mercer's just like, yeah, I knew that all along, I'm out of here. died at the age of 99. I was a year off. I thought he was only 98, but almost made it to a century. God rest his soul.
Did they finally prove that the mafia killed Kennedy this week?
It was Lee Harvey Oswald.
So that the grassy knoll where the shot obviously came from. Nothing to it, huh?
Nothing to it.
Nothing to it. Wow, that's crazy. I've been to Dealey Plaza because I lived in Dallas, and it's so crazy because you go up into the library and that shot seems so hard from the library, and then you see the X is. Yeah,
and easy.
It doesn't, especially not compared to the grassy knoll when you compare it to where the X is on the road.
Soraya gone from AEW, told it was a mutual parting of the ways, and that she had agreed that she had kind of done all they wanted to. The discourse on this has been somewhat interesting, because of course the work rate people were like, what a waste. Didn't really have many good matches, just had the one moment in Wembley, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I'm like, oh, that's pretty much what she signed up for,
I think, was the moment.
Yeah, was to be a character, was to help others, was to just wrestle and go in because she had been out for a few years. I mean, I think she did all right for herself in AEW. Again, given that you're never going to steal away Tony Khan's love from his star ratings necessarily in his booking. And the narrative around her, even when she was Paige in WWE, was always one of apologetics for me, where it's like, I never thought of her as being an exemplary wrestler necessarily. I thought she was good, but not the, but when she'd have like a match with AJ Lee or something like that, it would, and I think she's going to end up back in WWE at some point, maybe as a surprise in next year's Rumble. I don't think necessarily full time unless she's taken over as a GM again, but it was always, well, she needs the right opponent. She needs the right opponent. She needs the right opponent. She had decent opponents in AEW. I just view this as this was a run, and it got what it needed to get done. And then it was like, well, she's still under contract for a while. That's all that was.
Yeah. I mean, this to me speaks further to Tony Khan's booking problems, which, you know, we've talked about in the past. You sign these people, then they're on these long contracts. And after you get done with your initial big idea that you got for them, whether mm-hmm. it goes good or it doesn't go good, then they're just sitting around. Hey, Bandito. Hey, Vikingo. Hey, any number of other people on this roster. And either Tony has something for you eventually, or somebody who Tony's interested in right now wants to work with you, and maybe you get back onto the radar a little bit. But after that initial push, if you don't have something really cemented down, it seems like mid-card hell in this company is really hard to escape from.
Hey, you could go have a good match over on Collision.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Okay, but what's that going to do for my career? Thanks.
Yeah, wear your body down to go and work on our B show that maybe half of our audience is even watching.
Yeah, and positive, not even related news, but just weird news. TNA continues to make cutbacks, and this week, cutback on a number of people in the marketing department. A real good person to follow on this is Voices of Wrestling's Mike Gilbert, whose dedication to TNA is laudable, if not psychotic. but one of the names let go, Gail Kim.
Interesting.
And I'm like, what are you doing? Because if there's one thing that is a strength for TNA, it is their knockouts division, and it always has been. And it's one of those things where if I am either of these companies, but especially WWE, although this, who knows if this has something to do with the working relationship between TNA and WWE, I will say that as a possibility, not as a fact. I would, if I'm Hunter, I'm trying to make amends with Gail Kim, and I'm bringing Bailey with me because I know Bailey's dying for a match with Gail Kim on a major stage. And, you know, and if I'm AEW, no offense to Madison Rain or any of the other female coaches on their roster, but that's Gail Kim. Enough said. I would bring her in tomorrow if I could.
She's a brain trust of wrestling. I think she's just a wealth even for the stories alone. One thing that would be an issue is she going to be a team player?
Yeah, because she's more behind the scenes than anything.
But you know what I mean? Like, will she slot into the organization and kind of like fall in line? That's been an issue for her. And when she doesn't like things, she does take her ball and go home, and she's got enough money to do that now.
Yes, she has.
She's got the money.
TV chef money. It's so weird going to Vegas and watching the Tropicana get demolished piece by piece, and there's Gail Kim's husband, you know, parts of his body start to go missing day by day. But yeah, and you know, and it could just be she gets fed up with people. I mean, if she went to WWE, went to NXT, maybe politics come in, maybe even on the main roster, if she was there, politics would come in, she would be unhappy. I don't know. I would just say That's a name that should not be unemployed in wrestling for very long. That is
no. She's very talented. I think WWE would be wise to get her into their system to just have her as a coach.
On the other side of the coin, being brought coming into TNA as new booker, Delirious. Great. Now we have two companies that want to be Ring of Honor, and one of them's not even Ring of Honor.
Is Mike Quackenbush taking calls?
Oh, God. I don't know. He got kind of me too'd, but you never. outed.
I recall. I was being a little cheeky.
I know that. my cheeky was new Knockouts champion, Mandy Leon, coming real soon. I don't know what this new TNA regime is doing. Now that they've bought out people, I mean, they're keeping on some good people. They're not keeping on some bad people. I think they have a new infusion of money from the WWE relationship, which is great, but why would you not keep on some of the old guard? I get wanting your people in there, but I don't know. personnel wise, Rey Fénix set to debut next week on SmackDown. Chris, which faction is he going to get stuck into?
Man, I think it's going to be so cool when, like, here's my idea. Here's my idea for his debut. Hear me out. Rey Mysterio comes out. And he says, hold on. I think you might think you know where I'm going, but I'm going to zag where you think I'm going to zig. He says he knows about a great new luchador from Mexico that we've never seen in the company before. And then Rey Fénix debuts in a dynamic 5-minute match against The Miz. And then from there, straight up.
And yeah. That match is set up by Rey Fénix walking down the hall and Miz passing him by going, hey,
oh,
Dragon
see, you're
Lee.
The new guy here. You're the new guy with the mask. I don't like masked new guys. You need to get out of our company. And Rey Mysterio's like, yo, hey, what you're saying right now, I don't agree with it. We'll see you in the ring tonight.
You can fight my friend Carmelo Hayes.
I love my son Dominic. Have you seen him?
Dragon Lee's like, wait, what about me?
He calls Dragon Lee Dominic.
Accidentally. Oh, I'm sorry.
Tom, you are a good son. I'm not your son.
Not your son. You're like the son I never had. It becomes like that Simpsons episode about Big Brother. Or the other Big Brother takes him to a theme park and then gets in a fight with Homer, except it's Ray. And injury news, one of the reasons why the Hurt Syndicate are now, Hurt Syndicate in AEW? I can't remember anymore.
Business, they hurt people.
Business, you're right, they hurt people. Brian Cage injuring his knee in a match against Chris Masters, so it looks like the Murder Machines were taken out and replaced with Big Bill and Brian Keith. Be going a little bit into MVP's promo in the lazy river of wrestling criticism, whatever we watched, whatever we had time for. I'm going to start this one because I could not believe, Chris, the amount of anger from mostly late stage Gen Y, early Gen Z, maybe millennials, over this El Grande Americano AI generated promo where he's already insulting. I mean, the whole gimmick is cynical cultural appropriation.
Right. Yeah. He's a bad guy.
But the thing that triggered them was the usage of Gulf of America in the graphic. And how could, oh, I expect this from WWE, and that company being all crass and blah blah blah.
Like, okay, but like that's
he's a heel.
Right. That's misreading. That's misreading the signaling, right? Like, let's say you wanna, you need to necessarily turn on WWE Raw and still think about the newspaper you're reading this morning. If that's what you need when you're watching this show, I don't. But if you do,
I don't
either. I'm not saying you do. I'm saying to these people, right? Then remember that Chad Gable's a heel ipso facto if he's endorsing renaming the body of water that we have known for our entire lives as the Gulf of Mexico into the Gulf of America cynically. He's doing so as a heel. It's not an endorsement of the act.
Yes, no, his entire act is I'm an ugly American and
right.
I'm co-opting everything Mexican I can.
And I haven't seen the most recent polling data on this, but I believe that even most people, like generally speaking, the broad consensus is that Gulf of America is sort of an ugly thing that we didn't need to do that has no real utility.
And most people just roll their eyes. And
right.
Just
yeah.
It's just stupid.
It's
Stop
petty.
It.
It's petty and it doesn't do anything.
Yes.
Right.
And
yeah.
Just,
like, yeah.
I have not
ran into people who are really excited that the Gulf of Mexico is now known as the Gulf of America. And
it's
they would
freedom
honestly,
fries
they would probably be
again.
Really weird. Right. Like it would be actually kind of weird. So it's like, well, now I'm finally going to go down to Houston. And I'm like, yeah, okay, enjoy the humidity, idiot.
Go down okay. to Galveston. Enjoy
Have
Galveston.
Have fun, Chungus.
Yeah. Like, go watch Charles Barkley's rant about Galveston. It's the best. It's just, yeah. And I'm just like, I couldn't believe people were getting this angry over it. It's like, you know, I watch wrestling for an escape from the real world and stuff like that. I'm just like, all right. Fine, but it's a stupid AI generated thing. I mean, like that was the funniest part to me is, of course, AI can't generate hands very well. So like one of the guys had six fingers on his hand and stuff. But I'm just like, this is what Chad Gable wants to do with this gimmick. Don't you get it? They do this gimmick also, oddly enough, in Lucha.
Yeah,
the ugly
right.
American,
yeah,
you know,
and they
Ringo's
also do
Slow
this
Gosen.
In Japan too. This
yes.
is like the entire tradition of Gaijin wrestling. So I don't look. Two thoughts. One, I don't need my newspaper page open as I'm watching professional wrestling. Two. Even if I'm going to go, well, it's never been like this before. It actually has, you idiot. It's always been like this.
I mean, look, it's Is it insulting? Sure, but is it Buddy Landell selling Butch Reed for a watch? Is it Harley Race telling Ron Simmons to get his bags for him?
Yeah.
No.
Sergeant Slaughter
Sergeant
cynically
Slaughter?
Joining the Iraqis for a WrestleMania angle.
Along with the Iranian Iron Sheik. As Colonel Mustafa, there's a politics makes strange bedfellows combination just for
I don't know. Pardon me if I'm having a hard time getting around this notion that there's tastelessness in professional wrestling.
Yes.
It's like gambling in the Casablanca.
I'm shocked. You're winning, sir. Your turn, sir.
Okay, so let us take it. I'm going to take it to SmackDown. I'm going to start off. I'm going to start off with like my note about the end of the show here. I don't love Rollins for me just is an energy suck in pretty much every scene. And so what I'm about to say is kind of like it's based on the idea that Rollins is sucking energy out of the room so hard. CM Punk is a breath of fresh air whenever he walks into the camera, especially in this angle. He's kind of the thing that's keeping it afloat for me. Because, like, Roman's shtick is a bit tired, and the stuff that they've got him saying, I don't know, just rings a bit hollow at this point. And then Rollins, for his part, is... Like you don't deserve to main event WrestleMania and stuff, honestly. Like, that little wine session at the end felt real weak. The thing that saved that entire scene for me was Roman going to Punk, I got your favor in there. Paul Heyman going, yeah, there's your favor. And then Punk goes, that wasn't the favor I was asking for, but thanks. Like the idea that that's still hanging in the room. Punk is the energy that's sort of saving this angle for me and saving these scenes.
Yeah, Roman, I do like Roman's kind of cool, do ever what the hell you want. I'm going to win this match anyways. Type of laissez-faire. Whatever, you ladies argue it out, and I'll be here waiting to kick your ass. Rollins is bordering on Captain Quigg from the Kane Mutiny and the Strawberries. I don't know if you get that reference at all.
No.
Okay, in the Kane Mutiny, Humphrey Bogart plays Captain Quigg, the captain of a naval ship who kind of loses his cool in the midst of a very heavy storm. And he had been a taskmaster type of, you know, you need to follow the rules. Everybody needs to follow the rules type of a guy. And the people on the ship basically take command away from him in the midst of this storm because he freezes up and loses control. But on the stand, during the Kane Mutiny itself, it's a stage play. They remade it for Showtime a couple years ago that they turned into a movie, so they showed all this. But the stage play is the trial itself. And during the course of the trial, Quigg is playing with those metal balls that you know that people sometimes, you know, Larry Fishburne did, did the same thing in Boys in the Hood. I used to call them Benoit balls, but those are something totally completely different. don't Google that. But he's talking about they talk about this thing where somebody had a second dessert, and the people in the mess hall had the key to the mess hall, and so they helped themselves to a second serving of strawberries, and so they had to go check the ship to see who had a mess hall key to find it, etc., etc. And it turns out that it was Quigg himself who had gone in to go get, you know, it's that kind of Moby Dick white whale obsessionness. But it's also in the vein of CM Punk is bad for wrestling because he wasn't here in the company this whole time. He left us. You know, he's the father who went to get cigarettes and now regrets it and is now trying to make amends for it when I'm 15 and I don't want him to be
my dad.
It's
so weird. They need to choose a lane with their own, like, visions. Like, each one of their characters' visions is Roman. Are Roman and Seth happy that Punk left because it gave them the chance to achieve the way they always knew they could have had the roadblock been removed? Or did CM Punk leave for cigarettes, leave the house, and never paid the power bill, and there were two little kids living at home with no power and no water, sleeping on cardboard boxes for 5 years until they finally pulled themselves out of the muck? It has to be one or the other.
Yeah, Roman needs to not be ambivalent. He needs to be, no, Punk leaving was good for me. I ascended because Punk left.
Yeah, he should tougher. Be saying to Punk, you were right to leave. Your time was up.
Yes, because yeah, I was like, coming.
Yes, right. Like, Rollins could be like, you broke my heart. I needed my mentor. I needed blah, blah, blah. And Roman can be like, no, dude, I'm greatness. I never needed you. You were in the way. It's good that you left so that I didn't have to tear you down.
I'm going to counteract that with what I thought was a pretty good promo. Not, I won't say great promo, but good promo on SmackDown. I really liked the Naomi promo. I don't know how you felt about it.
I skipped past it.
Okay.
I've just checked out on that angle. So if it's good, I'll circle back to it. But that angle, I think, stinks.
The angle is not good, but her performance in terms of, I'm the legend that you guys turned your back on to move on with your life when you guys looked up to me for being the trailblazer, is the interesting take on the absolutely cynical way that they would push Naomi during, like, the Orlando WrestleMania because it was her hometown and whatnot. You know, they'd give her the quick title run or the title win at WrestleMania. Hey, it's Naomi. We're elevating black performers in February. Look at us, you know, that kind of thing. It's kind of a single white female thing. I thought it was pretty good, but since you didn't watch it, can I go to Raw for what I thought was a bad promo?
Yeah, please.
John Cena.
Oh God.
This is not working for me at all. Oh. There's no Dwayne involvement. And now he tells us he's going to ruin wrestling for us. And I said, is he putting on an AEW shirt and talking about star ratings? Because that'll do it for me.
I hate this. I hate this. He's went from being Woody in Toy Story to now being the Meta Grinch. He is a Grinch who stole wrestling in this extraordinarily meta way. And frankly, the only thing that, you know what makes the Grinch that stole Christmas work? The Grinch is not ironic. He's not ironically
No,
doing,
he really hates there, Christmas.
There is no meta commentary going on there. What does he not like? Christmas. He doesn't like seeing all the happy people. There's no wink, wink. There's no nudge, nudge. So right. When he redeems, it means something because you truly believe at the beginning of the book, the Grinch is a mean bastard who hates Christmas.
In the John cartoon Cena, version, yes.
Yeah. Yeah. John Cena does not hate Christmas. But, you know, that's the big problem here. He's the Grinch who doesn't really hate Christmas. He's like, and even his whole act against Whoville, you know, doesn't really ring true because the fans weren't booing him when he came back this time. They booed him after what he did. So it all just rings hollow and meta. And then like the spinner belt crap. I mean, dude, like
this is
like bringing up stuff from a relationship.
Yes.
15 years ago. Like, do you remember when we went to the Snoop Dogg concert, Chris, and you were kind of a jerk that night? I'm like, yeah, no, I was. It was like 13 years ago. I did not enjoy that trip out to East Texas. That stunk. Why are we talking about this? Like, that's how I feel with a lot of John Cena stuff. Yeah, and to your point, we shifted motivations and agency away from doing it from Dwayne Johnson and almost sort of resolutely and stoically going like, sort of almost, he's not thrilled with the deal, but what he wants is so palpable and he feels like he's so deserving of it that he's doing this thing going for the belt. Now it's, I'm going to take down Ric Flair. I'm going to bring back the spinner belt. I'm going to, you know, make sure that, you know, Vince McMahon's back on Monday Night Raw. You know, I'm going to bring back GMs and the authority. Like, it's silly.
This is harder to do a redemption story to also. If he is so driven by breaking that record, then you can understand him making cynical ploys to get there. If he's doing it because he actually hates the fans and wants them to be miserable. Oh, please don't take away the legacy of Ric Flair from us, John Cena, given current events.
Boy, the idea that they thought that Ric Flair was going to be like a humdinger slam dunk thing. I found myself really scratching my head on that one. I'm like,
and now he has to get involved in this angle, doesn't he? Because we've name dropped him.
Right. And like, I'm sorry, Jeff. What happened when Hulk Hogan came on our television screen earlier this year?
Boo!
Why the
Yeah, some
they're
somehow
saying boo ear. Great American boo ear.
Are they saying boo or woo for me? They're wooing you, Rick. They're wooing. Really? No, what? They're not.
Normally the woo's higher. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Everyone's voice is real deep in this crowd, Rick.
Yeah, I just like, boy, I mean, you're healing him and then you're also just healing him, and it's like one of those things where it's like, yeah, I love the Grinch corollary, especially since half of the modern day Grinch projects they've put into production, both animated and live action, need to have some sort of bitter, oh, see, the Grinch was hurt by all these things at Christmas and now he's angry. No, just make him a guy who hates Christmas.
He just hates Christmas. Like, he literally is fundamentally enough to say he irrationally hates Christmas. Lots of people.
Their happiness. I'm
lots
cool
of
with
people
that.
Irrationally hate things. Like, that's a very normal human experience. There's lots of irrational hatred in this world.
Have you met somebody who hates weddings because everybody's it's the perpetually single person? That is a real thing that's out there, guys.
People who hate couples. There's not actually a reasonable reason to hate seeing two people happy together. It literally does nothing to hurt you in any way, shape, or form, but you just hate it. I think it's enough. I don't. John Cena can just not be rational anymore.
Yes, and that could be help. Part.
That would help. He can't be reasoned with. Like honestly, it would. They're doing so much to make him reason with all of us. What if he's just not being reasonable?
Exactly, and that would help you when you need to turn him back babyface before the eventual redemption, because
especially
he's not going to retire as a heel.
It's going to have to be a shock of light, so he's going to have to see the error in his ways. So it would be much easier to have him on an arc of not being reasonable, with no rationale, being irrational, being unreasonable, and then finally, Cody or Kevin Owens, or I don't know who, maybe like all of them, Orton, Cody, Owens, like everyone kind of like just basically circles Cena. And he thinks they're going to fight him. And they're more like, no, John, we need to talk. Like, what the hell's going on with you, buddy? Like, what are you doing?
Yeah, you've reached the pinnacle now. And it's like, and then he just kind of comes to and goes, oh my God, I can't believe what a monster I became in service of trying to become the most decorated champion in WWE history. I thought it meant a lot. I thought
actually, you know, it'd be a great moment, him winning the title and then the chorus of boos, and he starts crying, realizing that this one they're not happy about.
Right. Yeah.
Like when the moment of realization is when he sees everybody and they're not happy that he has the title. They're sad he has the title.
Your turn.
And that means something. Yeah, the John Cena stuff I thought was a bit rough, as you said here. What else happened on our Monday Night Raw here?
Go ahead and do it, because I'm on pure promo run, and I think AEW is my next stop. So,
I mean, I think Braun Breaker and Penta kind of coming together as a little faction. I think that's good. Braun's a good partner, running mate for Penta. Especially if they're not going to bring Penta and Phoenix together right now, because Braun can do the talking and Penta can be like the silent guy and they can have that cool factor. Penta's silent cool, and Braun's, I mean, they've done a good job making Braun cool. Like, these guys could be a very over tag team for quite a while.
It's kind of the opposite side of the coin of Braun and Baron Corbin.
Yeah.
In that it's just too... I mean, that team was two ass kickers. This team is two ass kickers, but there's not the Baron Corbin. Like I love Baron Corbin, but there'd be times in his promos where he just came off so try hard as opposed to just being silent and violent type of a thing. But yeah, no, that's a good thing.
I'll give you another quick one too. I am so sick of Booker T on commentary during Stephanie Vaquer matches. Is there a way we can put him on mute? Can we remove him? Can we get rid of him? It's gross. It's
the thirst stuff.
It's
gross.
Effing gross. It's effing gross. Like, she is so talented. And the idea that like a male wrestler would be in the ring and you would have like a person on commentary who's attracted to men doing thirsting, like the way Booker T does it with Stephanie Vaquer, is unfathomable to me. Like, yes. Yeah, I mean, you know, I imagine Booker out there thirsting over the Miz's legs the way he does over Stephanie Vaquer.
We are in a day and age of women's wrestling and women, you know, it is a cosmetic business, but you're undermining.
You're disrespecting the work.
Yes, like, that's what I'm saying. Like, if Ludwig Kaiser and go, oh man, those trunks are really small on him this week. Yeah,
boy, look at that package. That's not a small package from Ludwig Kaiser. Yeah, right. No, right. Like that. That's. I mean, yes, we could all chuckle over the gay jokes, but like, I think, you know, when you start unpacking it, what's really going on there? I'm not talking about Ludwig Kaiser's good technical wrestling. I'm not talking about his moves or work rate. If I'm just like, wow, Ricochet really has incredible abs. Like, look at, he's got to have an 8-pack. That's insane. I can't get an 8-pack. You know, Excalibur, it's hard for me to get an 8-pack. But when I look at this guy, like, dude, he is shredded. And he's got really good quads, too. Meanwhile, Ricochet is doing a double moonsault, and I don't give a shit because I'm talking about his abs and his ass. Like, that diminishes, it disrespects any performer. It's and it shouldn't be that hard to recognize and stuff like that. The way that Booker T is able to get away with that, bluntly, WWE still has a lot of work to do if they're letting this shit fly week to week with Stephanie Vaquer.
Yes, I would agree.
It bothers me, man. It really does.
Because I'm heavy on the promos this week, I'm gonna lump my three AEW promos in one segment here. So you can have some time to gather your notes or thoughts if you want for whatever else you want to talk about here, Chris. Starting out with Kenny, Speedball, and Ricochet. Bad promo.
Yeah.
Because Kenny comes off as he has fiery babyface Kenny, and then he has I'm so good at wrestling, condescending jerk Kenny. And that was this Kenny after the match. They send out Speedball Mike Bailey,
who's
a
God.
Babyface, not the best promo in the world, to then say,
no, but he is. It's the character. It's like he's like coming out of the Karate Kid movies, and he's talking with all these people and like having to react not fully to stuff that they're doing. Like Kenny Omega's like, I'm going to put you at a wrestling, and Mike Bailey's like, huh. Like, come on, man.
Oh, you gotta watch that one on video, kids. That one was great. But he comes out to do the stupid, I respect you, you're my hero, Kenny, and also I'm gonna kick your head off, which then everybody starts to boo when you're supposed to like this guy. The guy you're supposed to boo is Ricochet, and trust me, there's nothing more Los Angeles and pursuing show business than doing a wedding on a Wednesday afternoon / in Los Angeles when the rates are cheaper and rentals are cheaper. And I just went, yeah, that's kind of perfect. But then we go to MVP, a man I like on promos. But this was a lot like Tiffany and Charlotte in that one person had a script. And person was freeballing it. And it was, and it, look, I can't prove this, but it was obvious to me that Big Bill had the bitch line. He was the guy who was going to say bitch when talking about the Iceberg Slim, or are you, I forgot the other guy that he referenced in terms of the combination, because he's going to say, are you supposed to be a pimp or are you one of the bitches? And it was going to be that. And instead, MVP, I don't see anything. And he called Brian Keith a bitch 30 seconds out of the gate. And you could just see Big Bill was flustered by that. And I don't know if it's necessarily a receipt on Jericho, because MVP and Jericho have had some things, but I heard they worked them out before MVP went on camera. But this to me appeared to be going into business for yourself in the promo and then undermining the complete segment. Bill and Brian Keith have no juice going into that match at Dynasty at all. And it's a shame.
No, but that's in part because the learning tree is narratively adrift, where you have Big Bill somewhat on a face turn, Brian Keith as a heel, but like a comic relief heel.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not a formidable threat. And then Chris Jericho doing his learning tree act intermittently when he's not having adorable interactions with fans. Don't get me wrong, the interaction with the fan this week was awesome. Like pro wrestling greatness, but it seems to me like Chris Jericho's in it for those moments at this point more than really doing anything to help those who work around him. And that continues to be the problem. Stand up for your guys. Make this story make sense. Get Big Bill somewhere. That guy's good. He's charismatic. He's got the look. He is a good worker. It's a lot of these guys in this company that I continue to be baffled by.
But that's something that, you know, Big Bill's too nice of a guy to take care of it backstage, and Tony won't go to MVP and go, what the hell was that type of a thing? So it's just going to keep happening. If you're a bully, you get away with things. And then I'll get to the most important promo of the night.
I think the MJF hurt business, will he, won't he stuff is kind of unintriguing too. Like,
I like it. It's just the problem is you also have a pseudo turn with FTR and Copeland, and you also have kind of a pseudo same thing going on with the patriarchy. Because I think Nick Wayne and Kip are going to break off of Christian, and that's how you get Cope and Christian together after FTR, because that FTR, it's so obvious to me that Cash is eventually going to side with Dax. But I agree, but I actually kind of wanted it. I kind of wanted MJF with the Hurt business and eventually them going, all right, we're kind of sick of you. Let's do that. But yeah, the intriguing part.
I mean, I would like it if he was allowed to join, but instead of the normal storyline of this works and they're all heels, it's more like MJF is constantly trying to get them to go beyond hurting and winning to doing heel work, and the Hurt business are at best lukewarm on it every time. Like, they'll do it when it's of strategy, but Lashley's always like, this isn't really what we're here to do. Like, I'm not here to, like, be evil. I'm here to hurt people and make money. But specifically, I'm here to make money. Hurting people is the way I make money. You know, I would like it. I mean, it would be interesting if it somehow ends up with them kind of functioning like the APA or something like that. The Hurt business are essentially muscle for hire.
And then the 50-50 proposition, which was the Swerve Moxley promo. On paper, I'm sure that this had a lot of good beats, because I did like the thing about, you know, Willow coming out and absolutely ruining the plan with Marina, and kind of Moxley kind of giving the little smirk and leaving and going off. The problem is, and this could have been solved in a run through. I don't think they necessarily did one in a production run through. The second half of Swerve's promo was awesome. When he goes into I'm a madman, I've done these death matches, I'm that type of guy, you know, you're looking for Moxley in terms of what he wants the wrestling business to be, because I still think Moxley's entire gimmick is stupid in terms of cleaning up wrestling.
Yeah.
The problem is the entire exposition to lead up to that emotional turn in there is undermined, because Swerve is in the ring talking face to face with Mox, who is Moxley's absolutely, I wouldn't say corpsing, but he's clowning a little bit while listening, like not taking it seriously, not doing. And Swerve is saying things like, "Yeah, that's your style, Mox. You're always hiding behind Claudio and Pac and Wheeler Yuta," and Moxley's just standing right there. With this, I'm not hiding behind anybody now. What are you going to do about it? What are you going to do? What are you going to, and Swerve just keeps pacing and talking and kind of avoiding eye contact, which is kind of it's a scared move versus.
Yeah, that is a weak thing. No, like, especially in confrontation, eye contact's very powerful. The weak person is the one who's breaking away eye contact.
Yes.
Always keep eye contact, because if something's incoming, you'd be better off seeing it.
Yes. Why are you pacing back and forth and looking at the audience and stuff while you're in the ring with a guy like Moxley, who, you know, is beating people up? It just project, and Moxley's the one projecting strength, but he's also projecting the wrong kind of strength, because it's like, yeah, what you're saying is bullshit right now, and nobody believes it. And I'm just standing here going, I'm not hiding from you. Come here and punch me. And it was just one of those things where I'm watching. And then when Swerve made that little emotional turn and started staring down Moxley and screaming in his face and stuff like that, then it became a good promo, I thought. But it's like, they should have started with that and seen where it went.
Yeah, but and then it just gets back to, for me, what is the point of the Death Riders? This is the overarching dominant faction. Why do they do things from week to week? What is John Moxley's goal? Even the briefcase, Chekhov's gun, they've somehow managed to make that completely uninteresting. They, and in fact, I would actually argue, by saying oh, you're scared to even wear the belt around your waist. You don't feel like you deserve it or whatever. That's the exact wrong thing to say in this angle with the belt. It's not that he's scared to wear the belt. He doesn't respect the belt. They don't right. respect the belt. This is just a piece of property that they strategically own. And this to me is the essential part of this. Why do we strategically own the belt? They do not do anything with this. This briefcase, this belt in a briefcase angle would be a very strong plot point, visual plot point that tells you a lot if it could immediately tell you, oh, remember, he's got the belt in the briefcase because of X. There is no X right now. There's no reason they have the belt in the briefcase. It doesn't even make it easier to hit people in the face with the belt. You could already do that with the belt and knock them out and get pinfalls.
And they can't do what would be the, I guess the interesting choice here is to say, I put this belt in this case because champions like you made it terrible or whatever. I mean, you can't do that without having some sort of meta connotation to it. Right? Because yeah. Swerve was a champion. He wasn't a champion for very long.
But yeah, in his mind, he was also a prestige champion. That was like sort of the yes. whole MO of his thing. And he should be very bothered that the belt that he once held, that he made prestigious, now can't even be seen.
Right.
Like, it should for Swerve be as simple as getting the belt back, not just merely as champion, but like to get the belt back because the belt to him is part and parcel of this black excellence narrative that's essential to him. That matters.
Yeah,
to him.
I'm not the fan of the I need to save the belt to save the company stuff, but you know,
it's I'm not even saying it like that.
No,
I'm
I know
saying
that.
Yeah. I'm not even saying save the belt to save the company. It's more like save the belt to save the belt.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Like to save what the title means. You're saving the belt to save the meaning of the title. What Moxley is doing, he thinks right, isn't this the criticism of the Death Riders? He thinks he is cleaning up wrestling. They say by doing what they are doing, they are improving the company, they are enhancing the business. The critique here is, you say that, but in taking these belts, hiding these belts, not having legitimate matches, but even more so taking the top belt in the company and putting it under cloth, you know, and under a suitcase and no one can see it. It's a mystery box now. You yeah. are actually diminishing the company. All of your high-minded virtue signaling is hypocritical and can be demonstrated to be false. You know why that's great, Jeff? They're heels. They're supposed to be wrong.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Any other points for any other show you want to make? This is your time, sir.
I'm glad that we touched on that. All right. I will say this. I think Gigi Dolan and Tatum Paxley is allowing Tatum Paxley to become a more normal character, and I think that's good. Basically ramping down the personality stuff that they had with her. Not unwelcome. I'm not saying keep an eye out for Tatum Paxley. Like, I don't think she's breaking out or anything like that. But I do think that helps, because now Tatum can actually be more of a contributor on promos, which Gigi's not amazing at. But right. Actually this tag team rounds out a lot of these two actually fill in each other's gaps and serve as nice compliments to each other. Small note, but definitely an observation. Chase, you just put it back together. I do not need existential crisis Andre Chase for the rest of my life.
And not for this long. My God.
Oh my God. I know. It's hurting me to see him like this, but not in the, I'm sad. I miss Andre. It's like, dude, I need this to end. Yes. And that's kind of how I feel.
Because he doesn't really bottom out. And
nope.
He doesn't really come back. I mean, he's not disheveled and drunk with 6 months of a hobo beard and, you know, talking about government conspiracies or something. That's
Oh my God. It'd be great to see him like try to hold the class behind the NXT building just to a series of cans and empty bottles. And he's speaking at them. And he calls like an empty Corona bottle Thomas. And he's like, Thomas, you idiot.
It's like that the bit on Aqua Teen Hunger Force where Meatwad has his friends as like a toilet paper tube and Boxy Brown and all that.
Boxy Brown. That'd be even better. Thomas, the empty Corona bottle, starts talking to Andre
they
Chase.
They start talking to him, yes.
Yeah, Daddy. I'm not going to study for this upcoming history final. You will! You will!
Yeah, that'd be so good. Oh, I see you've returned from the bathroom after 6 months, Mr. Schlitz malt liquor bottle.
Mr. Chase, I am not interested in your classes. All the bottles have voices.
Oh, God. No, I don't want WWE doing bad stereotypes.
No, I know. Yes.
But I get that. But it's also like one of those things. Like, it's like, I want Chase to bottom out so he can rebuild himself so he get past this stupid freaking.
Well, I want all these characters. It's like all these characters are just stuck in molasses.
Yes.
At this point, I want Shawn Michaels to come out at the beginning of the episode one day, and there's a big box on the top of the stage, and it's covered in cloth. Shawn Michaels comes out, oh, Shawn! And he comes out, and he does the dance still, and it's, like, honestly even more awkward than the last time you saw him do it, but he's still doing it. And he goes, all right, so get ready. We're doing something very exciting here tonight on NXT. And then he pulls off the cloth from the box. And when he pulls off the cloth, what we see is the NXT transmogrifier machine. And he announces that he is going to bring out 10 people now, and they're all going to step through the transmogrifier. And what happens after that is unknown because Shawn Michaels has been doing heavy science recently. Real heavy science.
You remember our first version of our transmogrifier where we had Saray out here and she turned into a member of Chase U. That didn't quite work out. We had to do some bells and whistles and come in there.
I have retooled this. And so then immediately Shawn Michaels tells us out coming first is our first person, Javon Evans. And Javon Evans hops through the transmogrifier machine. We don't see it for the rest of the episode. Who knows what comes next? Ethan Page hops through the transmogrifier. He was doing good things, but he can't seem to get out of it. Trick Williams through the transmogrifier. So many of these people through the transmogrifier. These gimmicks suck. I am so tired of like these people aren't evolving, and insofar as anything develops, it's boring, and the world needs to turn in this NXT world, and it doesn't. Ava needs to go. She stinks. Her segments never add anything. It's just a way of getting The Rock's cousin some screen time, and a bunch of these other gimmicks need to either move up to the main roster like an Ethan Page or need to really be refocused so that they're doing something. If you are not in a direct collision course with Obafemi right now, then you need to have a direct collision course for the North American title or the Heritage Cup, a clear one. And we need to have clear pictures of what's happening with the Heritage Cup. What the hell is the Heritage Cup? Why does the North American title even matter? Remember, it used to be the case that you could trade in the North American title for a shot at the championship.
I don't remember that.
This is like nine, like they did it for a minute where one pay-per-view, like somebody traded in the North American title to get that. Like, that's the sort of stuff that needs to happen. Like, everyone on this show is directionless, and it just makes NXT a very boring watch because no, I don't think Trick Williams is a very talented on-mic performer, but it does not help that he has crap material and has nothing to rise above. And like last and certainly not least on that like crap material, Tiffany Stratton, I am sorry. What are we doing with this woman? You are making her like memorize all of these lines. None of them give her any personality whatsoever. They don't speak to a character. Like, she's still Tiffy, but like, kind of babyface-ish, but like not in a way that like normal human beings would relate to as particularly sympathetic. I hate it. I just give me Tiffany Stratton who goes like, look, my whole life I've been written off as like a dumb blonde, but here's the reality. I work hard every day of my life. I am willing to take punches to the face, show the clips from NXT. I'm willing to bleed my own blood, show her bleeding her own blood. I'm willing to take risks, take devastating bumps, and do all the things that it takes to become champion. You may think I'm just
show her diving from the ladder to the floor at that NXT event in Los Angeles.
She has a sizzle reel, right? This woman has a sizzle reel that is prestigious, that speaks to toughness and skill.
Yes.
You don't need to pad this up with stupid dialogue and overwrought character. Basically say, you guys spend so much time on the external, gotta be a pretty girl thing that frankly society puts on me that you don't ever notice that I'm a badass, that I work hard, that I am capable and smart and tough and all of the virtues that make up what a great championship is. And oh yeah, by the way, I am a smoking hot blonde. Like that's the promo here.
You're not a flair. Woo! Shut up, Charlotte.
Right. Yeah. And oh, by the way, I didn't need a pedigree to do it. I did it with hard work.
Yeah. Charlotte is just beyond dreadful in this entire program too. I can't with her because she can't show ass. She can never show ass in any program she's in. It's always
never.
I need to be one up here. I need to be one up here. I need to be one up here. I'm going to get eaten alive on the stick.
And this Mania finish is going to be like not dusty in the Dusty Rhodes way, but like not strong for Tiffany Stratton when it ought to be.
Right. If she wins.
If she wins. I know. Which is also mortifying. But like, yeah, like that to me, I Charlotte is kind of she is also a program vacuum, like a Chris Jericho. You don't come out better for having worked with Charlotte unless you are one of the four horsewomen.
And even then, it's
and that's a mixed picture.
And even then, it's if you're coming in over me, I'm not going to like it. I'm not going to give you anything on the way in. See Becky and Sasha in both those feuds. I mean, that was, yeah, Charlotte went down kicking and screaming the entire way down. Let's go to Vader Club.
I already knew we were going there, so I have Mongo and Barbarian queued up as we've been chatting.
Look, I don't know why I got on a Mongo kick. I just did. I think it was a combination of a few things. Number one, the Halliburton being used in AEW. In my random watching, I came across a guy by the name of Joe Nighthawk Coltrane in the NWA who lasted, I think, two tapings and then was gone, but a good-looking guy. And I think it was just also my overall thinking of the kinds of athletes we bring into professional wrestling now versus then and how they get better and why aren't certain guys getting better. And it's because we don't have reps. And who could have been a guy who got better if we were still doing that territory, 7 shows or 9 shows a week type of a thing? And I think it might be Mongo. Now, don't get me wrong. Mongo has 2 left feet during much of his wrestling career.
It's the scream. His scream cell is my thing where he's always like, ah, whenever he gets hit.
But I love Mongo in his own way. He came in at a time where, again, all the ECW hardcores were coming into Nitro because Malenko and Eddie and Benoit and all these other guys were in there and everybody's saying he sucked, he sucked, he sucked. No, this is kind of what I want in wrestlers. I want big, brawling, beefy dudes beating the crap out of one another. This is my pro wrestling. This is what I love. And we give Mongo short shrift for his athletic abilities, having played in the NFL for 15 years, being part of the all 80s team in the NFL, all time Chicago Bears roster. He was not just a good NFL player, he was a great NFL player. And he's starting pro wrestling at 38 or 39 years old. And he's going in there and he's not horrible. That's the weird thing. I mean, he's not a five-star worker, but he's very, very good. I'll take a couple of the varies off of there. He's good. He's cromulent.
He kind of understands wrestling as
he gets
a
psychology.
Yeah.
He's a guy who needed what he really needed was house shows 5 to 7 nights a week where he could go work a 30-minute match with guys who knew what they were doing, like his friends Ric Flair, who by that time were just kind of, I mean, he basically got his position by partying with Ric Flair because Ric Flair knew a lot of the 85 Bears, like Brad Muster, who sat in the front row with Dave Meltzer during Chi-Town Rumble at that Great American Bash. I mean, he knew guys on that team. He got into wrestling through Kevin Green and through Flair. But you really needed not just WCW house shows where people were no-showing and could no-show and didn't have to work because they had guaranteed contracts, but really the grind of the road. And with like Nighthawk Joe Coltrane couldn't handle that. He was done. A lot of these younger guys, like I look at Lee Moriarty and I look at the other Lee in AEW, and I look at Private Party and I look at Top Flight. And I'm like, where are they going to do the work to get better at the psychological aspects of working a crowd versus just doing the high spots that they know how to do and stuff like that? So I came upon this match and then the tag match at Halloween Havoc 96. And of course, Meng and the Barbarian are awesome. And they will take a beating and they will give a beating, which makes them awesome. I think Haku and the Barbarian they weren't an actual team, but they did team for WrestleMania once when Barbarian was doing like the deer antlers and he was King Haku still over there, but they weren't the faces of fear that you know and love. And he who shall not be named is, of course, in this match, chopping and getting chopped, and just like that sunset flip into the power bomb that Barbarian gives him is absolutely brutal. But there is a moment in this match that popped me hard, Chris, in the Halloween Havoc match. I mean, the Barbarian Mongo one-on-one is great because they're not working well together, so they're just beating the crap out of each other with clotheslines.
I think but the thing that cracks me up beyond the they're not working well together, things are clearly not getting off, the end spot where Mongo gets the briefcase and waits for Barbarian to turn around. Were saying, you talk about wrestling psychology earlier, I'm going, what is the psychology of waiting for the guy to turn around to hit them other than cartoon psychology? The sort of thing that you pick up from like Daffy Duck and Bugs Bunny. But you just hit him in the back.
Well,
Devers got the
opponent.
Yeah. No, but I mean, you also just get him on the shoulders. You know what I mean? Yeah. I mean, because you're not even taking care of your opponent because he's making Barbarian take an unprotected Halliburton to the head.
Well, Meng does in the spot in Halloween Havoc. I mean, and he takes a brutal one because it's like not even a glancing blow on that one. I mean, Meng takes it full force in the head. But in the Halloween Havoc match, I don't know if you had a chance to watch it or not, but there's a spot in there, like it's Dusty, Bobby, and Tony on commentary, and Dusty is dreadful, but he wants this Mongo experiment to work. Heenan is kind of being Heenan, and Tony's really getting over, you know, Mongo's toughness. And although he keeps on bringing up Kevin Green because that's the match eventually, and turning
right,
on Kevin
Green. Right. Yeah.
But Mongo pulls out a drop kick out of his arsenal, and Bobby and Tony, a drop kick, and just mark out for, and it's a good looking drop kick. It ain't Lance Storm or Benoit or, you know, Coco Beware or whatever level drop kick, But for a big guy that size who never really had to leave his feet doing football stuff, it's a good drop kick. I think it's like one of those one-footed push-off drop kicks too.
Yeah.
But I mean, for a guy like that, I mean, as a man who is not very agile, who has tried doing a drop kick before and landed funny a couple of times, I was impressed. But it's one of those things where I don't know. I don't know if Mongo's underrated, not properly rated, could have been better, might have been better. It was just one of those things on my mind leading into the show last week that I kind of wanted to explore. I think he did okay for himself for a 3 or 4 year career, but I think, you know, partying too much, not being able, I mean, he wasn't training every day in the ring with Flair, anything like that. I think it's one of those things where it's like, we need to go backwards to go forwards. But I'd also really want these type of athletes back in professional wrestling. The guys from big name colleges or professional athletics who are big lumbering muscle dudes who are strong and can impress you with their strength.
Well, I mean, I even just like the swagger of the cocky football guy. I think Mongo had that. It would have been good had he had the right mindset. Yes. If he had DDP's mindset, right? Yeah. The work ethic of a DDP. To your point, boy, hard to say what the ceiling could have been for Mongo if he had had that kind of work ethic, because he could have
the same work ethic in the NFL that he had in wrestling. How about that?
Yeah. Even if he had gotten to wrestling and he links up with DDP, they're both like, hey, we're dudes in our 30s, but we both want to make it. Let's grind. Like, because DDP could, you know, like they could have learned a lot from each other.
Like, the two guys who are closest right now to me in terms of being in wrestling with that kind of background, I mean, Moose, but he's been in the game for a long, long time. But
yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
He has a legit film. But Obafemi, at least, like, he's a shot putter. He's not a football player, but he comes from, you know, the University of Alabama, you know, that big time pedigree. And that's the other thing I kind of like. I would love for them to use Kalani Jordan's Michigan State background a lot more instead of it just being, oh yeah, but she wasn't Kalani Jordan at Michigan State. She turned into Kalani Jordan, World Wrestling Entertainment superstar. And you're just like, meh. I like the legit background stuff. Even if JR killed it with his just fawning over it, time, especially with Dr. Death. God, you listen to a Jim Ross Dr. Death match. That dude cannot get enough of University of Oklahoma. Boomer Sooner. Man.
Oh God, no, he can't stop talking about it. And I mean, his myopia over college athletics. I mean, the thing with college athletics to me is always, for the people who are really into college athletics, they're really into it. Yeah. And for the people who aren't into it, it doesn't exist. It's like NASCAR, baby. Like, you know.
The only thing that kept Mike Rotunda a thought in my head was the Syracuse background, because, boy, that dude was dull, and then he became IRS, and I hated that too.
He wasn't good originally, but then he became IRS.
And yes, he who shall not be named is outstanding in the tag match. I know there are some people who wouldn't watch this because of him, and I get that, but man.
No, I still get it to this day. I've been able to do it a little bit here in the last 5 to 7, but I will say he's just not a guy I go out of my way to watch anymore. Yeah. It's like where he is at now for me is he's often a guy who appears in good matches with good workers that I like or whatever, and I like his work, but he's just, you know, he's not a legend to me. He's a very good worker. He's not, if you're asking where I rank him, not in like reality skill level, but like just in my head, here's Bobby Eaton. Benoit's down here. Very good worker.
Yeah, I have this emotional curve whenever I watch his matches, because it's one of those things where it's like, I'll start off, I'll watch it, I'll start enjoying the chops and the suplexes. I'm like, man, I'm really liking this match. And about halfway through the match, when it gets to like a spot where the other guy's doing the offense or whatever, I start to go, I'm feeling guilty right now that I'm watching a murderer on screen, and he's a horrible human being, and he killed his kid and wife, and he's really a scumbag. He's a scumbag. And then it gets to the end, and then I just feel like, oh, I probably shouldn't have watched that. I enjoyed it for, it's like eating, it's like if you go to a buffet and you eat too much. You're enjoying yourself for that first part of the meal, and then you just realize that you ate too much, and you start to have a stomach ache, and you don't know whether you should go back and enjoy yourself some more, or you should just be sick and you're not going to enjoy that. That's how I feel watching it.
Yeah, no, he gives me somewhat sating Chinese buffet vibes. I like that. I can go and do the General Tso chicken and the orange chicken, but afterwards I'm full, but I don't feel great.
Next week, Wrestle Dynasty. I believe it's on Saturday next week, or maybe I have my dates wrong or something like that, but we'll do a preview of it coming up. But we'll end the show there. This has been Shake Them Ropes. I am Jeff Hawkins. You can follow me on Twitter at CrapGame13. You can just follow the show at Shake Them Ropes, all one word. I also do a show over on Fight Game Media. I'm doing two shows this week. First is the Dynamite Show, Wednesday nights, Paul Ace Fontaine and myself. Go live on YouTube about 20 minutes after the show ends. Doing a thorough deconstruction of that week's Dynamite and all things AEW. Drops in your podcatchers for free the next morning. Tomorrow on the channel on YouTube, we're Garrett Gonzalez and myself and Paul are going to be reviewing the very first Double or Nothing, which we all watched from 5 years ago. How is AEW... how have they evolved? How have they not evolved? What was good? What was bad? And how have things changed? We'll probably get to all that at some point. I'll drop on the podcatchers as well sometime in the near future. Chris has plugs he'd like to do now as well.
Yeah, if you are looking for music lessons, please hit me up on the Instagram. Sometime later on this month, I will be doing my announcement on my songwriting and AI and U course, which will be going in June here, so I'm kind of holding off a little bit. It's just the end of March now, but I have all that stuff drawn up. If you're interested, please hit me up on Instagram. I think it's going to be a really interesting course, and does seem like even some of my students who I didn't think, you know, like drum students and stuff, who I didn't think necessarily were super interested in it at first, I started telling them about it, and they're like, yo, I want to go to the class. So always excited when you hear the kids want to show up and learn something. Gotta like that. So if you're interested in that, please do that. Check out my music on Spotify. Olive Branch Mix 15 should be incoming here, and we're hoping to get a final mix that sounds like the original Mix 1 did. We're now moving into that Michael Jackson Thriller territory where I feel like the thing's been overcooked, and I almost want my producer to wind it back. But Olive Branch should be out sometime soon on the Spotify here. That's my new single. I've got a silly song about global warming that will be out under another title. I'll be making announcements of that when we finally launch the Spotify for that group.
You're a mean one, Mr. Cena.
Hey, everybody. My name is Jesse Collings, and I want to tell you all about my show, the Gentleman's Wrestling Podcast, here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. On the Gentleman's Wrestling Podcast, we do a thorough analysis on the biggest issues and trends within the pro wrestling industry. We talk a lot about pro wrestling media. We talk a lot about fan culture and wrestling's place within general pop culture, and we talk about the broader influences that are shaping the way we discuss and analyze the pro wrestling industry. We've had some of the brightest minds in the pro wrestling intelligentsia on the show, including WrestleNomics host Brandon Thurston, both Rich Kreich and Joe Lanza from the Flagship Wrestling Podcast, Trevor Dame from the Through the Years podcast, and a whole lot more. This isn't a show for hot takes. It's not a show recapping the latest episode of television. This is a show focusing on the biggest topics in pro wrestling and doing a deep dive on the real stories behind the surface level analysis you might find elsewhere. The Gentleman's Wrestling Podcast is available wherever you get your podcasts, and we'd really appreciate it if you gave us a try. Thanks.
Hi, I'm Kristen Bell. Carvana makes car buying easy. Isn't that right, hun? Dax?
Sorry. Did you know about this 7-day money-back guarantee?
A week to evaluate seat comfiness, you say?
A week of terrain tests? Yeah, I can test the brake pad resistance at variable speeds.
Make sure all the kids' stuff fits nicely.
Make sure our stuff fits nicely.
Oh, the...
Right. Still need to buy the car. Getting ahead of ourselves here.
Buy your car with Carvana today.